हरिः ॐ सहनावावधु सहनोभुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, proof of the existence of many cells. Right? Not that it's all, we're all just one self, and we're an illusion that we're different cells, or that we don't even exist at all. Right? So. According to Shankya, there are many selves or conscious principles, one in each living being. If there are only one self related to all bodies, then when one individual died, all individuals would simultaneously die. But this is not the case. The birth or death of one individual does not cause all other individuals to be born or to die. Blindness or deafness in one man does not imply the same for all men. There are only one self pervading all beings, then if one person were active, all the cells would be active. If one were sleeping, then all would sleep. But this does not happen. And there is therefore not one self, but many selves. Secondly, human beings are different from God and from animal and vegetable life as well. But this distinction could not be true if God, human beings, animals, birds, insects, and plants all possess the same self. Therefore, there must be a plurality of selves that are eternal and intelligent. Thus, it becomes clear that there are two realities, Prakriti, the one all-pervading, unconscious, material cause of the universe, and Purusha, the many pure, conscious, intelligent entities who are not subject to change. It is from the interaction of these two principles that evolution occurs. Right? Okay, so the evolution of the universe. According to Shankya, the entire world evolves from the interaction of Prakriti with Purusha. This interaction does not refer to any kind of orderly conjunction, as in the contact of two finite male and female material substance. It is rather a sort of effective relationship through which Prakriti is influenced by the mere presence of Purusha, just as sometimes one's body is influenced or moved by the presence of a thought. Evolution cannot occur by the self, Purusha alone, because the self is inactive, nor can it be initiated only by Prakriti, because Prakriti is not conscious. The activity of Prakriti must be guided by the intelligence of Purusha. This cooperation between them is essential to the evolution of the universe. So it sounds great if Purusha meant the Lord, right? But since they haven't really defined it that way, so we can see is that what's happened has been defined this way, so it very easily fits into what we're saying. And then with some you know, how you say, mental speculation, you can somehow or another, you know, adjust it into it's not talking about the Supreme Purusha. Because right? If we see, when we read most of these things, they fit very nicely with the philosophy. But then, seeing that this is atheistic, then it means here, Purusha means a soul. So then the point is, if the Lord is there, then that's the natural thing. Since the soul is inactive, how is he making the universe work? And the Prakriti is unconscious, so how that would work? So it has to be some supreme conscious that's making it, like Nyaya is pointing out. Matter's unconscious, so you'd have to have the supreme conscious, because we're not actually ones doing it. That's a weakness here in the atheistic Shankya, is because then if it's a cooperation between the intelligence of Purusha, then how is this cooperation happen? Because each Purusha would have a different idea how it should work. So why does it work on one law, though it has nothing to do with what we really actually want it to happen? You know what I'm saying? So it sounds good, right? Because the point is, if someone is an atheist, there is something wrong with their thinking. There is going to be some shortage there. Right? So even though they're very intelligent in analyzation in so many areas, then there's some problems there. So we can see is that, but there is the level of why does Prakriti deal the way it does? Because then you can say, on the material level, then the Supreme Purusha is inactive. He's just the observer, right? It's because the living entity has desires, therefore the material energy, it evolves, it transforms, mm-hmm. right? So you can say is that you have to understand both Purushas to be able to understand this. At the same time as you have to understand both Prakritis, right? So the Jiva is both Purusha and Prakriti. Right. In other words, it's Prakriti, but it's in the mood of Purusha. Mm-hmm. Right. So because of that, then it's interacting with Prakriti, and Prakriti is changing. But the laws under which Prakriti is changing and is active is given by the Supreme Purusha. It's his potency. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Then it makes sense. Otherwise, it doesn't quite. Because, you know, because others will say, well, God can't be involved. You know, then it's his doing. No, it's our doing, but it's under his supervision. Only because we want it. If we don't want it, then we leave here, go to the spiritual world. Yes.
What prevents them from accepting God?
I guess they're demons. In other words, they're not Bali Shah, right? You wouldn't spend your time with them. If you bump into them, then you say hello, but other than that, don't get involved.
It's Maya Pratigya.
Yeah, Maya Pratigya. It's because they want to be intelligent but not see God. You know, I say, you know, it's just like the man in the wetsuit. He wants to be in water but not get wet. You know, so he makes it quite a, you know, you have to make some arrangements. So it happens. It seems to be that there's some purpose. It means that's why these are all bogus philosophies. Even though the elements they're made out of aren't bogus, but how they've actually put it together is bogus. You know what I'm saying? Let's say like you have, you know, a spoon, a whisk, you know, the pan, the lid, you know, the vegetables. Now, when you go and finish cooking, you know, and you leave the spoon and whisk inside the preparation, so when I serve it, I put it on your plate, you'd say that's nonsense. But it's not that the spoon itself is nonsense. It's just the way it's been put together is a bit of a problem. Does that make sense? So that's what's happening. They're using all these nice Vedic elements. And in different areas, they come closer or not. You know, like, you know, how the universe is constructed in that. Then Shankya, up to now, is coming the closest. Right? After this, I don't think anybody gives a breakdown more than this. You know, it means the philosophies higher than this use this as a breakdown. Like that. You know, so how you say it? Yeah, so four philosophies use this as a breakdown because it's so well done. But the problem is what happens before and why that breakdown is functioning. That's where they miss the point. But they worked out very nicely that, you know, how everything's constructed and how it's interacting with each other, the mechanics. But they don't really understand, and the Purusha Prakriti principle. They're catching the principle. But they don't understand how to apply the principle to the Supreme Purusha and how the Jivas, you know, very minor, you know. Is that? Yes.
Well, inside the six system of philosophy, it is the only one who have a theistic and atheistic approach?
Oh, I would say no, that they all have both. It's just that if it's in its theistic, then it would be a Vaishnava philosophy. Yes. See, Nyaya, if it means it's theistic, but it's not actually completely, because they're not worried about God. If it's in its natural state of the Vaishnava, it would simply be the system of inquiry and discussion. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't be itself the process of philosophy. Mm-hmm. It would be the process used to discuss philosophy. Yes. And analyze philosophy. Mm-hmm. You know, Vaisheshika also would be the points of understanding that, you know, just show that the material world itself is what we're enamored by isn't actually the reality. It means what we're enamored by is a grouping of atoms, you know, by the Lord's potency according to our desire. But it changes. So it's not real. So the soul being eternal, you can't get anything from it. So it'd just be a portion of our philosophy. Nyaya would be not a portion of the philosophy, it'd be part of anvikshiki, because anvikshiki means philosophy and logic. So it's the logical way you analyze and discuss philosophy. And then vaisheshika would just be a part of that, just like the shankhya is just a part of how the material world is functioning. But the spiritual world, material world, relationship between the living entity and God, that's not explained by this part of it. Right? Yoga, that you're connecting with the Supreme, that would be there. But you wouldn't use that system. You can if you want. If you want to spend 60,000 years, or at least 36,000, right? Malaya Dwaj did it in 36, so he was a little quicker. But, that means 100 years of the demigods. So that's 36,000 of our years. So you want to spend that much time, to know the Lord, while you could do it in one lifetime by chanting and these things. So all the essential elements that you're doing in Ashtanga Yoga, you're doing, but not through a mechanical process. Right? But if you like mechanics, then that's it. But if you got the time, you got 36,000 years, hey, go for it. If you don't, then better stick to chanting Hare Krishna. Right? Like that. So it's not the most effective way of using the process of yoga, right? Because karma yoga and jnana yoga aren't being used, ajnana yoga aren't being used to their best. And jnana yoga also, it's not, you're meditating, you're just meditating, and it happens to be on Vishnu. But it's if you're meditating on that you're servant of Vishnu and he's the Supreme Lord and we have a relationship, that's a much more dynamic form of meditation, much more effective. Right, because the other one's neutral, so how is Vishnu supposed to respond? You know what I'm saying? You're just looking at him, so what's he supposed to do? Right? But you're not looking at him because you want to establish or interact. You're just looking. If you just sit there and just stare, what are you supposed to do? Yeah, so he looks at you. Okay. So it's not dynamic. So it's much more, the Vaishnava is much more dynamic. Karma means that you're performing your duties and using pious activities, but they're only of value if you connect them to the Lord. So if you connect them to the Lord, then it will free you from material existence, the miseries of material existence, and situate you in eternal happy life. But not here, there. So that's the weakness of... Yeah, they're thinking that you're going to eternally be happy here. So, but that you're following the pious lifestyle and all. So in other words, the karma mimamsas have the lifestyle, but they don't connect it to the philosophy. So there's not proper yoga. The yoga, they have the yoga, but they don't use the bhakti element. So it's very, very mechanical, slow. The shankhya is that they have the analyzation, but they don't connect the analyzation of the process within the bigger picture of, the situation of the jiva and being conditioned and being liberated in the natural position of the spiritual world. Right? So each one has a shortage. Or Vedanta is that they get all the different elements of actual how the philosophy works, but they think that what they're dealing with here is an illusion. So you can just get rid of this and go back, rather than it's an illusion that you think it's not connected to God. Right? Because if they actually said it's illusion, everything's Brahman means you think it's something enjoyable or something for you. That's the material, but it's actually Brahman. That's actual Brahmavadi. But the Mayavadi, then it doesn't even exist. So then there they've gone so far and then missed the point. Mm-hmm. Is that if it's all Brahman, means the illusion is also Brahman. But somehow or another, illusion is separate from Brahman. You know what I'm saying? So it seems to be a popular thing, the non-Vedic, that you always have the transcendental element, and then you have the devil. Right? So it's just it's not. You can see is they're all part, but they've missed the point. So they're basically, you could say, apasampradayas. They're close, but off track. You know? So, because they each analyze this area so well, it's worth knowing, because then you know very nicely all the different parts of our philosophy. Same time, it's worth analyzing, you know, well, because then you understand how people get off track of the actual philosophy.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Like that. So as long as it just comes up and someone's, you know, has good associations, sincerely focused on doing their service and this and that, generally all these things will go away.
Yes.
But if they somehow or another focus on one of these, then that can become too prominent and actually distract or disrupt their devotional service. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the...
Maharaj, it's interesting how people can get so attracted to parts of this.
Yes.
Because it's Krishna's qualities, you know, it's
yes.
all from Krishna. But
yes.
as you said, it's we're missing the point. If it's
because they're not seeing its connection to Krishna. You know, it's like they'll even see that God is there and he's controlling the world, but they're not actually even seeing that the logic itself, the logic is God. You know, or this, the analyzation is God, or the parts are all, or like this, is that they all act in this way. But as it says, it goes back to, but how can something unconscious act so nicely consciously? Something that's just homogenous, why would it act in all this if the homogenous principle is the higher principle? You know what I'm saying? You know, because the point is that then, you know, homogeneity would be the real underlying point of everything. You know, you become homogeneous with your couch or something. You know, you perfect couch potato-ness. But then the potato and the couch are different, so they have to be a, how to say?
Multi-homogenous?
I don't know. You'd have to somehow know to develop your couchness, you know. Yeah, so that's the difference. Like the wife plays house, but the husband plays couch. You know, this way they all are homogenous with their particular aspect.
It seems like these philosophies, the living entities who are attracted to them, they have fear of spiritual existence.
Yeah, you could probably say that. Because then what means you have to give up, I'm the controller and enjoyer. So that's the nice thing with all these. You don't have to give it up. But of course, then you don't get out of the material world. Right? You know, at least not efficiently. Maybe you get out for a short time and then you're back. You know, but yeah. It doesn't work out so good. Okay. Abhideya, buddhi, right? So now, because now what the other two did in the beginning, they would take as their praman, as part of their sambandha. Somehow they put it into abhideya, right? You know, in other words, the sources of knowledge, perception, inference, and testimony, right? So they stick it into here. Otherwise, that's what makes the Abhideya very big. Otherwise, if you took this part out, it would probably be like the other ones, you know, like a couple of sentences and Hari Bal, right? According to the Shakya system, buddhi possesses the following eight qualities: virtue, dharma, knowledge, jnana, detachment, vairagya, excellence, aishvarya. Oh, excellence, okay. Non-virtue, adharma, ignorance, ajnana, attachment, avairagya, and imperfection or incompetency, anaishvarya. Okay, so means dharma, means, yeah. So virtue, knowledge, detachment, excellence, and then the opposites of them. So it has both of them, so it could do both very nicely. Right? Yeah, because if it didn't have it, how would it work with it?
Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah, because that's something we generally don't work about. If it's the negative,
yeah,
you know, is the negative element. If it, you know, in other words, the non-existence,
mm-hmm.
you know, if the non-existence wasn't there, you wouldn't have the space for, you know, to put it there. You know, it means that abdharma wasn't there, there'd be no place to put it. You know, so the first four are sattvic forms of buddhi, while the last four are overpowered by inertia, tamas. All of its attributes except knowledge bind prakriti and involve the self in buddhi. thereby entangling it in worldly concerns and miseries. Okay. So knowledge then is beyond Prakriti. It doesn't connect itself with Prakriti. And so the other seven then connect yourself with Prakriti, so you become conditioned. Mm-hmm. But through knowledge, then you can get beyond that conditioning, right? That's the... Right? Yeah, the point is that the knowledge, you're just taking about knowledge of this system rather than knowledge of the Supreme Lord. Yes.
What's Aishvarya in connection with this?
Aishvarya here, excellence or opulence, or, you know, it means, in other words, you've done something well, it generally gives a very good result.
It's connected to Buddhi.
Yeah, no, all these are connected to Buddhi.
So I don't understand the connection.
What we're saying is, of all these eight, seven of them will involve you in the world. But jnana, it's something that you can stand back from it and observe it and not be involved in it. So you can separate yourself. So that's what he's making the point, is that seven of them will cause conditioning, either by pious or impious means. But the one, knowledge, then, you know, at least that will free you from it. But the problem is then their definition of knowledge isn't complete, so they don't include the Supreme Lord and all that. Mm-hmm. So they'll get some temporary result. The pure self falsely identifies with Buddhi and thereby thinks it is experiencing what Buddhi is experiencing. But the point is that Buddhi is not itself. The only other thing is dead matter. You know, so then the problem comes is then, how is dead matter experiencing? Yes. Right? Mm-hmm. So that means there is knowledge in the soul. Mm-hmm. Right? It's just being covered by, and it's identifying with, the material process. Right? Just like the soul has a form, and it can relate to, and senses, and mind, and desire, so it can relate to having that, but it's covered by this material. But it actually has the transcendental. Mm-hmm. So it's missing the point here. Mm-hmm. So here is that, you know, they're saying if it's all dead matter, how is it experiencing? But it's like, because Purusha's there, then the material nature somehow or another takes on these qualities. But if it's unconscious, how do you, you know... It's a bit of a stretch, but you know.
Yes, Maharaj, the pure self is a Purusha.
Yes, the Purusha here, meaning they mean Purusha, meaning the jiva.
Yes.
But what's making this work is the Supreme Purusha. It's his potencies that make it so it has that power, so you can experience and all that. But it's the jiva's desire that he becomes involved in it. So the two are there, you know. So in other words, the Lord's not active, the jiva's active because of his desire. But at the same time, the jiva's not active, he's just an observer because it's the Lord's potencies that get it done. Mm-hmm. So both are observers, but one's involved because of his desire, mm-hmm. like that. You know. So both are inactive, but at the same time as the jiva, by consciousness, is fully trying to be part of it, but he's not actually.
Yes.
He's not doing it. He thinks he's the body, so the body's doing something, so I'm doing it. But no, the body's doing it. The jiva's doing nothing, actually. Right? And the Lord, then, it's his potencies carry it out under his direction, but he himself is not actually involved. You know, like that. So that way, the definitions for Purusha, you can apply to both the Supreme Purusha and the individual jiva as Purusha. So you can see how they get confused. Either they take one as the other, like they've taken all the attributes that are applied to the Supreme and to the jiva. You know, the Mayavadis will take it the other way, like that. Or the Mudas will say neither are there, you know. So somehow or another they can't tell this difference. That's why Prabhupada was making the point, or the Bhagavatam was making the point, Malayadwaj attained perfection because he could understand the difference. Because most can't understand the difference. Right? Because the word self is always used. It's always said Atma. But you have to know what that means by Atma. Whether it, you know, at least in English you'd be using a capital S or a small s. You know, that becomes the confusing part. But you can tell by the context. And like when we're going through Manu, it always just says soul. And it doesn't always say supreme. Sometimes it does. And sometimes, and how you tell, be talking about one and you're not sure what it's talking about, but in one of the verses it'll talk about them both, and you can see the difference. Right? So then you can tell like that. Okay, the pure self falsely identifies with buddhi and therefore thinks it experiences what buddhi is experiencing, right? So what is the material experience? It identifies with that, so it feels it's experiencing that. But actually it's only identifying with it, so that proximity, then it gets that experience. But it's actually not the one that's actually, it's just a witness to. But through the use of the buddhi's eighth attribute, knowledge, it reflects pure and well-filtered knowledge into Purusha from its mirror. And Purusha comes to realize its false identification with buddhi's objects and to recognize this transcendent nature in all its purity. Right? So in other words, knowledge, through knowledge, then the natural, if the intelligence is using knowledge, then when the jiva, because he is identifying with buddhi, when he looks at buddhi, then he basically sees himself reflected. Right? But if he's using the other seven, then he will not see himself reflected, and he will think, oh, I'm dharmic, or I'm opulent, or I'm, you know, whatever it is like this. I'm detached, or I'm, you know, so many different things. Yes?
Is that because knowledge is an inherent quality of the soul?
Yes, but that's, they're not catching here, because they're saying it's different from the soul. Because all these is that it gets up there and the soul's not conscious and doesn't have any attributes. Because in saying that he doesn't have these material attributes, they also think he has no attributes. Right? But he's eternal and all-pervading. So, I mean, you know, the souls are everything, but these are qualities. So it's funny how they'll accept a couple of them, but not more. You know, why is it only that many? Why, you know, what's the limit? Was there some magic number or something like that? Or, you know, does that make... So that's the funny thing is, you know, Brahman is all-pervading and all-blissful and all this and that. So all qualities, but there's no qualities. You know. So it's limited. So they're catching something, but they're putting it together wrong. Right? So you can say it's so much well, you know, how you say, well-intended intelligence, you know, misapplied. Yeah, you know, but I mean, super intelligent, you know, that they can take. You know, in this there's two things, and in each one of these there's two things, and each one of those there's two, and they get fine down to fine little point, but they can't actually tell the conclusion. So that's why then doctrine, your Siddhanta is the most important. Krishna says, of logic, I'm Siddhanta, because if Siddhanta is there, then the whole thing works nicely. And so in all these, Siddhanta's wrong, therefore the logic's wrong. Right? You know, because if you have Siddhanta, then the pieces that you're putting together, the discussion goes in the proper way. But if you don't, you spend all day. Maybe you use some good logic, maybe you didn't. Your logic was better than the other one, so therefore it was better or more appreciated, but they're still both wrong. Mm-hmm. Right? Because Siddhanta's wrong. Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, then it's okay. Thus, buddhi, the discriminating or decision-making function, stands nearest to the self and functions directly for the self, enabling it to discriminate between itself and prakriti and thereby achieve realization of its liberated nature. So why is this buddhi, you know, doing this? If it's just unconscious matter, why would it worry about this? Or, you know. So in other words, Krishna is buddhi. He's intelligence. Mm-hmm. He's knowledge. He says, I am knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. So it's the Lord who is actually creating this. Right? So again, they can't distinguish between.
What's their point?
Their point is that this knowledge is there because it's so close to the soul and it's the decision-making function. So if you use proper knowledge, you know, which they're going to define now, right? Now they'll define what is proper knowledge. Then the soul can actually see itself as separate from prakriti. That is Purusha, not prakriti. Because their problem is the Purusha is thinking it's prakriti. So as soon as you understand your Purusha, not Prakriti, then Prakriti just goes back into its natural state, and then the jiva is just, I don't know, left floating around in his, you know, position of bliss and happiness. I'm not sure what's the, you know, why would he just want to float around? It's just like, it must be really upset or really, really annoyed to think that just floating around is going to be somehow not a great. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like you're so angry, you don't want to see anybody, you don't want to do anything, you just want to go in your room, close the door, and knock it. Yeah, you know, and of course you got to slam it, you know, and a big bang on the way out, you know. That's one thing is that, you know, it's the G when it comes into the material world, you have that bloop sound. You know, is it, what when it goes out, isn't it the other one, you know? Yeah, it makes the other way, yeah. Have to do bloop and then run it backwards, you know. Yeah, okay. Does that make, you know what I'm saying here, does it make sense? Does it make sense that this is there? Yeah, yeah. That's the whole point. Yeah. In other words, we understand how they're not making sense. Okay. The source is a valid knowledge. Shankya philosophy accepts only three independent sources of valid knowledge: perception, inference, and testimony. Right? So we'd follow the same, because comparison basically is just part of, I think, inference. Mm-hmm. You know, at the same time as you're using perception to be able to tell the difference between the normal apple and the crab apple. Mm-hmm. You know, but it's not like it's an important aspect. Mm-hmm. Including within these three are other sources of knowledge, such as comparison, postulation, and non-cognition, which are therefore not recognized as separate sources of knowledge, right? So some recognize as separate, some not. This way you end up with 8 or 10. There's 10 different ways to get knowledge, but as defined by Shankya and defined by us, is that...
Nyaya.
Huh? Nyaya. No, but it accepts 4. Yeah, it means that they'll take the other 6 and work them into 4. We'll take the other 7 and work them into 3. Mm-hmm. Like that. But that's one thing that Nyaya does very nicely, is going through each one of them and showing how it's not, doesn't have a separate existence. Mm-hmm. But just somehow or the comparison, I guess, is somehow or there's more fun or something, so they decided to leave that one. You know? According to Shankya, there are three factors present in all valid knowledge: pramata, the subject, prameya, the object, and pramana, the medium. Okay, subject, object, and medium. So you're ending up with the same principle. You're going to have masculine, feminine, and what is the connection between them. Or the noun, it means the two nouns, means the subject and object, and then the verb. Mm-hmm. Right? It means what is causing the connection between, what's the relationship. Yep. Right? Because the relationship is through some kind of either dynamic activity or just state of existence. Right? Because mm-hmm. your verb can be transient or intransient. Mm-hmm. Right, it can either be describing a state of existence, or it can be describing activity. Right? Mm-hmm. That makes sense. So it's all the same. That's why grammar works so well with philosophy, right? Because the philosophy is explained through language, but the nature of language, the law of language, also is, you know, defines the philosophy. So it's also one of the ways to give example. Okay. Pramata is a conscious principle that receives and recognizes knowledge. It is none other than the self, pure consciousness, right? Because the subject is the masculine principle. The object is the feminine principle, right? And whatever activity is going on. Yeah. So that it's the dynamic interaction between the masculine and feminine principle that makes something work, mm-hmm. right? So here they're putting the soul as the masculine principle, mm-hmm. which in dealing in the material world is the actual point. The soul thinks I am the yes. Lord, and the Prakriti is the field of activity to be enjoyed. Then there's a particular action that's being done to connect the soul with the material energy. Right? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. But the point is the supreme subject is the Lord. The supreme object is the internal potency. Mm-hmm. Right? And so the actual, the medium then is devotional service. So we end up not as Purusha or the Prakriti, we end up as the assistant, right? Mm-hmm. As the instrument to the action, mm-hmm. right? So that's the thing, is we're actually the assistant to Praman. Right? So that's why it's very important for us also to accept Shastra, because that's where we can be an instrument. Mm-hmm. You acknowledge that, and you do it, means, in other words, you follow the scripture and its purpose of the devotional service to the Lord, then you're assisting appropriately under the internal potency. Mm-hmm. If you accept the Shastra, but not that principle of devotional service, you're situated properly, means in that you're doing what you're supposed to do from the mechanical point, but unfortunately you're assisting the external energy. Yes. Right? Mm-hmm. So that's called pious activity. But the jiva is supposed to be, the only reason of pious activity is to please the Lord. Right. So in other words, the Shastra, unless it's seen a connection to the Lord, then we're not accepting it as actually the understanding of following Shastra. Yeah. Okay. Pramata is a conscious principle that receives and recognizes knowledge. It is none other than the self, pure consciousness. Prameya is the object of knowledge that is presented to the self. Right? Pramana is the modification of the intellect through which the self comes to know an object. Thus it is the source or the medium of knowledge. Right? So that medium is either perception, inference, or testimony. It's because, in other words, you're there, you're observing something. So it's through knowledge that then there's going to be a transformation in your understanding of it. Right? If I see it through the senses, I'll see it one way, through inference another, through shabda another. Mm-hmm. Right? So shabda is the actual position. Mm-hmm. Right? That's real praman. Mm-hmm. Right? Because when we give praman, you know, then means the others are there, but for us, if it's not in line with shabda, it's not important. Right? In other words, you're trying to get it where you see, I have shabda, I have authority. And according to Shastra, according to Guru Sadhu and Shastra, I have this authority, is that I am trying to see, apply this in my life that I can actually directly perceive it. Right? It's not I'm starting with that and then trying to understand the Supreme. I'm starting from what the Supreme says and the representative of the Supreme, and then applying it to my situation. Right? Mm-hmm. So that's pratyaksha, right? Now, the problem is I have what I see, I have what the Shastra says. But the point is there's something I'm not seeing. Mm-hmm. Right? So that's where inference comes in. So that's why the whole process is about the logic, you know, of what is it called? You know, the minor, the major, and the middle term. Is because I'm able to see the minor and the middle, I don't see the major term. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right? That's what I'm trying to figure out. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to apply shabda to my situation. Mm-hmm. Right? Does that make sense? So then I can see the major. So I can see the major. Because the minor term is what I see. Yeah. Right? The Shastra is the medium. Right? Again here. Mm-hmm. Praman is the medium. Mm-hmm. Right? It's the middle term. Shastra is the middle term. Mm-hmm. Right? And then I'm trying to understand the major term is how the Shastra applies to the situation I'm seeing. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yes.
That's what one's trying to do. And so when you can see that, now you call it pratyaksha. Now I'm seeing it. So that's called realization. Right? Before that, that's contemplation. I'm trying to understand it. Right? So that's why manana is so important. I'm trying to understand it, I'm applying it to the situation, and I'm getting more and more understanding to the point where I realize. Mm-hmm. But it's only worthwhile if you started from shabda. Mm-hmm. Right? Otherwise, what's the use? Otherwise, by the faults of the jiva, but he's going to, through his perception, is going to come to a wrong conclusion. Right? Cheating propensity, imperfect senses. Because if pratyaksha is based on senses, if your senses are imperfect, then the actual knowledge you're getting is not going to be perfect. Right? But if you're starting with perfect knowledge and applying it through the senses, then the senses will see that perfect knowledge. Does that make sense? So that's then what's the what you want's trying to get to. So then that form of perception, which is what was called the yogaja, that's considered the best, because then you're realizing what the shastras say and you can see things that people others can't see, because you're seeing through the eyes of shastra. So that's shastra chakshus. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Yes.
Do they accept shabda?
Yes. They accept shabda. So that's what it says. That means testimony is shabda. So perception, inference, and testimony. Yes.
They all accept shabda. I was talking the other day to Vipa Gauranga. He was quoting the famous Madhva scholar.
Okay.
Pandurangha or something.
Okay.
And this scholar said the first four, starting from Nyaya to Yoga, they are nominally Vedic. That means they will quote the Vedas, whatever this suits their philosophy.
Okay.
If it doesn't, they will just keep silent and present their own view.
Okay.
And only Mimamsa and Vedanta can be accepted as really based on the Vedas, because they will deal with Mimamsa with the Karma Kanda portion.
Okay. Well, the Purva Mimamsa and the Uttara Mimamsa. Okay. So that means they'll deal with every aspect within
right.
there.
And base
okay.
everything on the Veda.
Okay.
It's a matter of interpretation.
Okay, so it's okay, just the hermeneutic. So the other one is they just use the Veda as far as it suits them. But it's not that they have some other source of, other than their own intellect. They're not quoting from, you know, Max Müller or something like that. Yeah, okay. So when they do take it back to the Veda, but only in selected poor places. Okay, that's nice. Yeah, so that's why it's more solid and can defeat the other ones, because it has more, it deals with more of the Veda.
And especially Mimamsa, the hermeneutics, which is accepted by Vedanta also, the way you interpret.
Yes, yes.
Right.
Yeah.
This part is especially strong.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's also said from when we were discussing in Nyaya, is that means you have that, it's that svota, I think svotavad, right?
Right.
Is that svota or svota?
Svotavad versus varnavad.
Svota is the word, no? Something or?
Something like glimpse. That you understand an idea.
Oh, okay.
Or maybe you're talking about different things.
Maybe, I'm not sure, but it's something about the whole thing about words. So then Nyaya was making the point that it's the Lord's potency that's in the word that is able to carry that meaning.
Yes.
So therefore you want to know what the intent is. You know, because in other words, the word is carrying, has a potency. So what potency is it actually carrying? Because it could be he's used the wrong word for that potency, and that's why there's a confusion. You know, if you use the right word for the potency, then it's nice. So then, the intent is important. Right? You know, I'm not sure how we got to that, but it's something that you said before. Oh, the Mimamsa. So Mimamsa is how to very nicely understand what's the intent. You know, what is actually meant. You know, what are they actually trying to discuss?
The spirit of the law.
Yes.
Not so much the word.
Yes, yes.
Just on a historical note, I was wondering, like the atheist Kapila, was he just completely ignoring like the Devahuti Putra Kapila? Would he have been aware of that dialogue from the Bhagavatam? Would he have been aware of all his contemporaries in the other six philosophical schools?
I think there are many sometimes aware that other schools are there, but how much they understand of them, that's another thing.
Uh-huh.
You know, they'll just think, yeah.
Well, they say the Sankhya, usually they say Sankhya is one of the oldest schools out of these six.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Because also it's like, you know, who would use logic as a philosophy, you know, so that might come a bit later. But, you know, also when they're talking about, because they're going oldest from what do you call it? or when they would be documented, because they go by when they're written. Oh, okay. So that's the thing is that all these things will be there, and they'll all be somehow or another connected with the Vedic.
Right.
And so then, you know, they'd be documented at a certain time. But they're always, this kind of thought has always been there. So these six are inherent when the world's created.
Right. But they're only written, like, since the dawn of Kali Yuga.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the only time they'll ever be written.
Yeah.
Because before that, they just speak. So as Vyasadeva compiles the Vedas and gives it to different persons, then these different philosophies become documented. So it may have been one of the first to be documented, but the point is that this particular form, whoever was, two generations back, it was Vaishnava.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the thing is that they have their own idea, and so, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying? It's just like you see in the Western philosophy. If everything goes back to, Socrates, Plato, and Aristotle, mm-hmm. then the thing is that's also the same, just three generations. Mm-hmm. But Aristotle is just purely material. Mm-hmm. Socrates was, only worried about the spiritual. Mm-hmm. And Plato was kind of trying to play his cards right so he stayed alive, So he's kind of dealing with both, But his would be more cloudy on the things that Socrates, so it doesn't make sense, so the material makes sense, so Aristotle will take that, and that has substance, it's logical, it's something solid. Mm-hmm. So then you end up with, so somehow or another they do the same thing, because the Purusha, there you have all these overlapping definitions. Mm-hmm. So if you just, here it's about us and the Jiva, so therefore you apply all that to the Jiva, then it seems to work. Mm-hmm. I even think they give the term jiva something else, right? In one of them, jiva is given a different. It's not doesn't mean the soul. Jiva is meaning something else, something to do with material energy or something.
Selective hearing.
Yeah, selective. So I was saying they just take portions, whatever they like, and stuff like that. Okay.
There was a group who were saying that they were propounding devotional service, and they claimed that they were connected to Lord Chaitanya. When you saw their disciplic succession, it stemmed from Satyamata's sister. So they claim false heritage, just like you're saying about Sankhya, that it's actually Sankhya's the oldest. And there's actually some false connection, some false heritage from that.
Yeah. Yeah, because there's always this element of prestige and stuff. Okay. Pramana is the modification of the intellect through which the self comes to know an object. Right? In other words, we can know through pramana. So in other words, we're not the one actually know. We can know through. So we're always assisting. Right? Thus, it is the source or medium of knowledge. Valid knowledge is therefore the reflection of the self in the intellect, which is modified into a form of an object. So it's reversing it. It's actually, yes, it is the reflection of the self, meaning the supreme self. And by that, then we can see ourself. Right? When the sun comes up, we can see ourselves. Sun doesn't come up, we can't. And we have a great mirror, and we're still not going to see anything. So it's still you require the supreme self for the individual self to be able to see themselves. Mm-hmm. Right. And then here, valid, therefore reflects in the intellect, which is modified in the form of an object. So then we will define, okay, now this is that. Right? Means by knowledge, then we can understand what something is. Then we're going to call it something. Okay, perception. The Sankhya concept of perception, pratyaksha, as a source of valid knowledge, is different from those... What is it?
Posited. State of position. Posit an idea.
Okay. Sankhya concept of perception, pratyaksha, as a source of valid knowledge is different from those posited by other systems of Vedic philosophy. In Sankhya, valid knowledge means a definite and unerring cognition that is illuminated or made known by the self through its reflected light in buddhi. Right? The mind, intelligence, and senses are unconscious material entities and therefore cannot perceive or experience any object. For perception or experience, consciousness is needed. And consciousness belongs only to the self. But the self cannot directly apprehend the objects of the world because the self is niskriya, meaning motionless or without action. And without motion or activity, apprehension is not possible. If consciousness alone could apprehend the objects of the world, then, because the self is infinite and never present, one would know all the objects of the world. But this is not the case. The self knows objects only through the mind, intelligence, and senses. True knowledge of an external object is attained when the impression of the object is perceived through the senses and reworded in the intellect, which then reflects the light of consciousness onto those objects. Perception is the
direct.
Okay, is the direct cognition of an object through the contact of the senses. When an object such as a chair comes within the range of vision, there is contact between the chair and the eyes. The impression of the chair is produced in the eyes, and that impression is then analyzed and synthesized by the mind. Through the activity of the mind, the intellect then becomes modified and transformed into the form of the chair. The predominance of sattva in the intellect enables it to reflect the modification of the chair in the self. It is then reflected back to the intellect. Thus, the unconscious intellect, which is modified by the object chair, becomes illuminated into a conscious state in which perception is possible, just as a mirror reflects the light of a lamp and therefore illuminates other objects. So the intellect, an unconscious principle, reflects the consciousness of the self and recognizes objects. Any questions? Nice. Okay. It's like they're going through a lot of trouble here. A lot of trouble. Means you have the things so that you're talking about the mechanics. The mechanics of how the process is working. But the point is that the soul is not active, but the point is material energy also is not. It's only active because the Lord's potency is there. So it's actually only through the grace of the Lord that one can perceive the objects. Because they're trying to point it out that each soul is somehow or another, it's his potency is making the part of the energy he's working with function. But the problem is then you'd think that there'd be some point of overlap where, his is and yours is and there's some gap or something, but it's not. It's perfectly connected. So there must be some superior purusha that it's his potency that's making this work. Mm-hmm. Right? It means, in other words, the senses are dead matter, right? The mind is dead matter. The intelligence is dead matter. But that potency of the soul, the consciousness of the soul, is able to be, that consciousness is reflecting onto that light of that, is reflecting onto the intelligence. That intelligence and then can reflect that onto the object. In this way, you can, like he's holding the mirror. The mirror actually doesn't have any light, but it's reflecting the light. So in that way, you see. So because the soul is connected with the intelligence, therefore it can see the chair. Mm-hmm. Right? In other words, the intelligence is illuminating the chair, and the soul is, through the mirror, is seeing the chair. Yes. Does that make sense? So that's the process that's working. But that whole process can go on is still the Lord's potency. Mm-hmm. Right? Because otherwise the soul doesn't have that power, because the chair is a lot bigger than us. It's way bigger than us. Some of the Lord's able to. So that's the mechanics of what's actually happening. So when we say the soul's only the observer, not the doer, that is the fact. But at the same time, is dead matter is also just dead matter. So we're saying, making it out that it's the active principle. But how will it be active? Well, we're saying motive passion, but how is it all put into play that all this is happening? So it means there must be a higher potency that's doing it, a higher intelligence that's managing it. Yes.
So I seem to remember in the third canto, it's discussing the aspect of Adidaivaka, that there's actually demigods presiding over each of the main tanmatras, and
yes,
it's only by their, you know, interaction with the Adiatmic principle, with the Adibhautic, that we actually can perceive anything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, that would be the yeah, because that's the thing is there. We're not taking into this other, this higher authority.
Yeah.
It means in here, they're missing that higher authority. But it's still the principle of that you as the individual, you're the Adiatmic.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. And then they're the Adidaivic.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Adibhautic is what you're seeing.
Yeah.
So the point is the intelligence is there, it's being reflected, but it's by that potency of the Adidaivic that it's working.
Yeah.
But their potency comes from the Supreme Lord.
Right.
Yeah. So that would be where Karmakanda would give more, because they'll get more into all these demigods and
mm-hmm.
everything else, so they'll have much more of an explanation.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise this will explain part of it,
mm-hmm.
just the mechanics, but why, what's behind it, why it's working like that.
Yeah.
It's not...
developed.
Yeah, it's not very developed. You know. Okay. Oh, here we go. Okay. Two major proponents of the Shankya theory of reflectionism, Vijnana Bhikshu and Vachaspati Mishra, hold different views, or differing views. According to Vijnana Bhikshu, the knowledge of an object takes place when there is a reciprocal reflection of the self in the intellect having been modified into the form of the object, and the intellect in the self. Well, you have to have both. So that means there must be that connection between the intellect and the soul, and the intellect and the object. Right? So in other words, here is that means certain things we're taking for granted in this. You know, that makes it, well, why all this? Why is explained like this? There's in the history, it mentions, when, like in Australia, when Captain Cook, when they pulled into, you know, whatever it is. What's that?
What Levi?
Huh?
Honor.
No, what's the one that everybody goes down there to that beach?
Port Arthur?
No, it's over on the other side of Sydney where everybody goes.
Bondi,
yeah, and that whole, but that's the beach, but that whole, that must be, have a name, that whole kind of bay there. So there's some place like that, you know, so he
Botany
came in,
Bay.
Huh?
It's Botany Bay.
Botany Bay.
Yes.
So he came into somewhere in there, and the boats are there, you know, big monster, you know, boats. Cook was from where? From England, no? Yeah, so big British boats are there, you know, and they got big masts and sails and this and all kinds of dirty, stinky guys and ropes and all kinds of jazz, right? But the Aborigines that were there could not see the boats. But one of the older ones that was Aborigine was sitting there and was noticing the water's acting funny, because the wave should move and do something, but it's not. It's going off another direction. So then they were somehow or another to work out that there's something there. And then trying to figure out what it is, because there's no words, there's no concept. So even though the senses are bringing it in, there's nothing. So when he's saying here, it's transformed into a chair, because you call that a chair. Otherwise, an ant is just something else you walk over. The cat's the thing you just rub your back on, but it's not a chair. You know what I'm saying? So we call it a chair. That's why it says it has to be put into words.
Yeah.
Or is that one part? That's the problem. You can never find somebody when you want it.
Reworded.
Yeah, here it is. Yeah. True knowledge of an external object is attained when the impression of the object is perceived through the senses and reworded in the intellect. Because it's just, all it is sense perceptions. And then it's where, that's a pillar, that's a floor, that's a rug, that's a rock, you know, that's a bag. But it's reworded into that. Otherwise, it's just information. You understand? So that's what, because otherwise, getting that, we're taking it that it's, that of course it's a pillar, but it's only because you've identified as a pillar. Little kids don't identify it. That's why they keep bumping into them. Right? You know, it's supposed to be a space there, and annoyingly, there's this pile of bricks there. You know? So that's why their intellect doesn't, it hasn't acknowledged its existence, you know?
Sometimes it happens when we read scriptures, the same thing. So you don't see something.
Yeah, of course.
That's the same.
It's that aspect, but it's also the element of realization. Yeah, it'll be that point, because it's also unlimited, so there's unlimited things you can pull from there, but sometimes you don't. I remember somebody was telling me that when they, I think they took their parents or something, either it was themselves or their parents, or it's two different things where they both said the same. They went to the temple and they appreciated the nice flower arrangements. You know, everybody was, you know, dancing and singing and facing all this wonderful flower arrangement. They could not see the deities. You know, like that, you know. So it's there. Just it's, you only perceive, because that's only how much you're allowed to, you know. Then you have karma, how much you can understand. You know, it's just like you're perceiving that the stone is there, and you're thinking, I should not bump into that. And just when you get there, you don't perceive it anymore, and you stub your toe. Right? So that's the thing, is that knowledge, then God is knowledge. So therefore, he's still that potency of what's being reflected. Right? So these are, in other words, this is actually, because otherwise, how does the soul see through material senses when he's transcendental? Right? So these are how they mechanically work. Because others don't take, there is no other philosophies that go this deep other than the Vedic. Right? Therefore, they can't explain it. Right? So most religions is just, you know, God's not involved, or the soul is the body, or something. They come up with some other, you know, conclusion that doesn't, you know, works for them, but, you know, it's got problems. But this is like so fine that generally most philosophers, you know, who claim to be philosophers would have problem with this, you know, because it's just, but it explains how it works.
Marsh, is this metaphysics?
Yeah, I think you'd say this is, yeah, basically Shankyism is metaphysics. So these, it's an area that most don't go into. You know, the physical, the spiritual, okay, but the metaphysics, like how the two, you know, can connect, then that's the thing. So if you can understand that, because Tathasta means the spiritual has been somehow or another involved in the material. So if you can understand how it's involved, then you know how to break that. So then it means if it's reflected in that way, so that means how am I going to identify that? I'm going to identify it by, you know, means the perception, but what am I going to base that on? What's the authority? Right? So now, is that chair something to use in Krishna's service, or that chair is something to be used for sense gratification? Right? So that's right actually where it's happening. The mechanics is right there. You're seeing the field, and then what you're doing is perceiving the objects that you would find of value, right? Because Krishna says he's everything. But there's unlimited things here. But we're only perceiving what we value. Right? We don't perceive something else. Right? Like we're talking now, you may not notice this, but it's there. You know? So the thing is what's of value you perceive. So what's of value is actually Krishna. So then the thing is then are we what we're perceiving, do we see it as opportunities for sense gratification or opportunities for service? Because that's all we're, it means it's only our values that we're going to see either way. Right? We're not going to see someone else's values as opportunities for service or sense gratification. We're going to see our own values as opportunities for sense gratification or service. Does that make sense? You know, you value something. Let's say you value cooking. So then when you go into a kitchen, you'll see opportunities. Or if you like to eat, you see opportunities, right? But for someone else, you walk through the kitchen, it's just one of those rooms that somehow or another happens to be there and your mom likes to hang out in it and you couldn't understand why, you know? You know what I'm saying? So if there's no value, you don't see it, right? So then the whole point comes down to is because it's not actually you, right? So what are you seeing? What is the actual process that's going on? Right? So the thing is you're perceiving these things by the reflection and the intelligence. But the point is it, you know, what is the authority? Is it I'm the controller and enjoyer, is that the authority? Or I am the servant is the authority? So that's where the polluted consciousness, because if you're perceiving it, because it's consciousness on the mirror reflecting this object, right? So therefore, then what is it that is the basis? So if I'm servant, I'll see opportunities of service. If I'm the Lord, I'll see opportunities for sense gratification. Yes?
But the values don't change.
Values don't change. Values don't change.
For each individual.
No, because that's your conditioning. That's the naimittic. Yeah. Means you could say your values, it means how you value your values, that can change. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. But it's just like, let's say someone is a writer. So he's still going to see, now before he would write books, read all kinds of books and, you know, like that in a particular thing. Now he becomes a devotee, so now he's going to look at our books and he's going to want to write and, you know, in line with our book. But the writing remains. So before it was sense gratification and now it is service. You know, does that make sense? Someone was a cook before. So that's his value, but now before he cooked for sense gratification, now he cooks for Krishna. Does that make sense? You know, so that's the thing, it doesn't change. So these are just mechanics, how the soul is connected. So he's not actually doing anything. Right? He's just the observer. But the material energy is actually doing. Right? Because we say the soul is not killing anybody, this, that, it's the modes of nature that are doing it. Right? But the thing is the soul's connected with that. So how is he connected with that? That's through their reflection of the intelligence. So then, because this intelligence is the closest thing to the soul, but it's the closest thing to the super soul also. Right? So that's the whole point, is that through the intelligence you can either understand the Lord or understand material energy. Because if you see yourself without the Lord, you're not actually seeing yourself. So what they discuss is self-realization. The pure self isn't actually the pure self. The pure self is only if it's in connection with the Lord. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What was the point, which was polluted consciousness?
Polluted consciousness is I am the controller and enjoyer. That's the basis that starts the whole process rolling. Right? So then one comes into the material sphere. Because material means it's like, I'm looking at something, and if I see it as something to use for Krishna, then I'm seeing with spiritual consciousness. If I see it as something for sense gratification, I'm material consciousness, right? So that can happen here. It's just consciousness. So that means if you're situated within the spiritual realm, it's the same thing. I look at something, I perceive it as sense gratification, I'm actually in the material world. I see it as service to Krishna, I'm actually in the spiritual world. Just like here, the saintly person is seeing the same thing as the materialist, but the saintly person is in the spiritual world,
mm-hmm.
and the by consciousness, and the materialist is in the material world by consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Although you're physically situated in the material world, but it's consciousness that defines where you actually are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just like you're sitting and talking to somebody and they're not paying attention, so you say, "Where are you?" Mm-hmm. What do you mean, "Where are you?" You're sitting right here. What do you mean? No, but they're somewhere else. Like that. So consciousness defines. Yes.
Right.
So the demons, they're in Vrindavan. That is the spiritual world. But they're perceiving it as sense gratification. So they're not actually in the spiritual world. They're physically located in the spiritual world, but actually by consciousness they're situated in the material world. Right? And the sage is in the material, situated in the material world, but by consciousness is actually situated in the spiritual world. So it's consciousness. You know, so that's what makes the difference. So none of these philosophies deal with that original pollution of consciousness. Because all they're distinguishing between is karma for sense gratification or liberation, jnana for liberation. That's all. But they haven't distinguished between I'm not the controller and enjoyer. That none of them. That's what makes them all bogus. Right? Yeah?
According to these mechanics, what does it mean whenever, you know, heat untold, happiness and distress, the super soul is already reached? What does that mean? You know that person?
Means he's not disturbed by them.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't see anything as a problem. He's only seeing things as they are. Means how the mechanics of just, you know, how it's working. Because why is it hot? Why do you call something hot? Let us say you're from Siberia, okay? And, you know, it happens to be, you know, whatever it is, Saturday, you know, afternoon. And you walk in the sauna, right? And it's, you know, 110 degrees inside. Do you call it hot?
Nice.
You say it's nice. This is nice.
Yeah.
Everybody else thinks you're crazy.
Yeah.
So it's not hot. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's perception that you call something hot or cold. Like right now, the weather, is it hot or cold? Huh? Yeah, but depending where you're from, then, you know, if we went down south to like Mangalore, they'd say this is cold because it never gets below 26 degrees. So this is a freak out for them. Like that. You understand? So it's just defined, you define it. That's why it says it's put into words. So your value, so temperature is your value. Therefore, then you like it hotter or colder, specific definition of that. But it's simply your perception. You've worded it that way. You've called it hot or you've called it cold. All it is the senses are bringing in, there's a difference in the temperature. But why it's hot or cold? You know what I'm saying? It's a higher temperature, a lower temperature, but why do you define it as hot or cold? You know what I'm saying? You know, or why do you call it temperature? It could be humidity. It could be so many other things. You know what I'm saying?
So how then is not affected by those things?
Means he doesn't affect because he's not applying that this is good or bad for my sense gratification. He's only seeing what's good or bad for service to Krishna.
Okay.
Right? So that means then he's seeing everything according to what is actually happening. Right, and the only way he's going to see that is in relationship to the Lord, because Krishna is not talking about the impersonalist, right? Because that's useless. It means the impersonalist may follow those same techniques, but it's basically useless, right? So what he wouldn't talk about that. So it means that you're seeing everything according to how the Lord says it should. You know, it's supposed to be seen.
He doesn't have a vested interest for the sense gratification.
No, so therefore there's nothing you'd only identify what's opportunities for service.
Okay.
Does that make sense? So therefore there are no dualities. There's only service.
Yeah.
Right? You know, and something that's not service is just left. There's no interest. So where there's service, that's where it's dynamic. So it's positive. Right. Well, duality is this is good for me, this is bad for me. No, this is just what you're supposed to do. Here's an opportunity for service because you are a servant, so you can serve.
Are there sometimes good conditions for service or harder conditions for service?
That may be, but that just is the situation. You know, you're sitting here and there's a piece of glass and there's a door and it's locked and on the other side of the glass is all kinds of prasad. Right, and the morning program's over, and you know the Dwadasi Paran is running out. You know, so that's harder. You know, or easier as you're going around the deities, you know, going back like that, and there's a line, and there's people right there, and you just get some prasad right there. You don't have to look for it. So easier is you're at the front of the line. Harder is you're at the back. You know, so it's just, you just do your service, so you don't worry about it.
Yeah.
If you're really committed to taking prasad, then you don't worry about it. What happened to her? Where's our Hollow Man?
He went to Calcutta yesterday, so he's a bit exhausted.
Oh, okay.
He's under the weather. Too much halava.
Okay, yeah. Okay. According to Vijnana Bhikshu, the knowledge of an object takes place when there's a reciprocal reflection of the self in the intellect having been modified into the form of the object. Right? In other words, intellect takes that form. Right? So that's how you see it. And of the intellect in the self. The senses contact the object and supply the impression of it to the mind, which transmits the impression to the intellect, right? Because that's the next stage. Is the intellect has to, by present previous experience, it's called the memory, right? So that's where then you have an idea, okay, this could be this, or this could be that. The intellect then becomes modified by the object, but because the intellect is unconscious substance, it cannot analyze the experience of the object by itself. Its predominance by Satvagun, however, enables the intellect to be reflected in the self. And the self is in turn also reflected in the mirror of the intellect, which contains the modification of the object. In this way, the intellect then experiences the object. This theory of reflectionism is also accepted by Vyasa in his commentary on the Yoga Sutras. Right. So in other words, this is the technical thing of what's going on. You think you're just looking at it and go, oh, wow, nice chair, but this is what's going on. You know.
How do some people, they perceive things differently? They're looking at the same thing.
Yeah, but it's just because of the value system. So in other words, what's there in the intelligence, it means, in other words, that the intelligence transforms differently because you think it's something different. But, yeah.
When the Aboriginals saw that the Captain Cook and his men were coming, they didn't see the bullets or something. They started falling over, and then they didn't realize they had sticks which were firing things.
Yeah.
They just suddenly
the amazing thing is they've come there and they're just sitting there and doing nothing. Why would they be shooting at them?
Habit.
Yeah, habit. Yeah. Leches got to be leches, you know.
Right.
Yeah. See, this is the difference. If they were French, they wouldn't have fired at first.
Different
value. Yes, different value system. And it's only, and the only difference is 22 kilometers, right? You know, it must be something to do with the clay, right? The chalk. Sometimes when you cross and the chalk there, it does something to the mentality. I don't know. But when you get far enough away from there, it gets a little better, right? So as you get over to Wales and like that, or up to Scotland, it gets better. Yeah, it's weird, these things. Yeah, they can't tell. But then, you know, after they figure it out, because there is nothing in the intelligence to, because there's no knowledge. So there's nothing for their intelligence to use. You know, like that. But once they get that, now they figure out something to do. Those sticks and the fire coming out of them, and people falling over, are connected. Then they know. Okay. I think they learned fast. Like that. Okay.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Shri Prabhupada. Jai.